Welcome to the live show of Dave Lee on Investing. This is where we're trying to reform our minds. We're trying to learn how to think critically, think independently, not follow the herd, but actually look beneath the surface of things and look at things from different angles, and hopefully in the process become better investors. Today we have a special episode here. We're going to be taking a first look at Square. The stock symbol is SQ, and we're going to look at the core kind of essence of what Square's business is, and we're going to look at kind of what the potential challenges, but also benefits ahead that Square has. All right, hope you enjoy today's episode. All right, so yesterday during our live stream, actually, B4YN said, a question, Square earnings is in 2 days, so that's actually tomorrow. What are you looking to hear most about? What would you, what would make you more bullish on the company? And that question got me thinking a bit more. And you guys can go ahead and thank this guy, B4YN, for that question. It really got me looking into Square a bit more. I've been looking at Square the past maybe two months or so, and I'm still a newbie on kind of Square. I just downloaded the Cash App a few weeks ago, tried it out, deposited some money, tried to buy, you know, a fractional share today through the Square Cash App. And I'm still learning about the company, but I want to take you guys through kind of my initial steps of how I process, how I research a company, and what I'm looking for in terms of growth. All right, if you guys can hear this in the live stream, go ahead and give me a thumbs up, and that'd be great. Okay, so to understand Square as a company, you have to understand that Square is actually divided into two sections. One is the seller kind of services, and the other is the Cash App, which is directed more to consumers. So if you look at the first kind of essence of what Square the company is, it's directed to seller services, basically. And here you have like Square for retail, and this is what a lot of people kind of understand Square to be initially, which is like you have this Square kind of like reader that you stick into your smartphone, right, or your iPad or something, and you're able to go ahead and take transactions very quickly. And that's kind of the first product that Square released to the marketplace. However, it wasn't kind of the ultimate vision of Square, right? Square's vision is far greater, and it's to provide an ecosystem to democratize business for people. So they're trying to get businesses and individuals, right, even the small fry person, to be able to have a chance at making a successful business without having to go through all of the hurdles and difficulties in terms of setting up credit card, you know, merchant accounts and transactions and accounting. And they're even trying to help small businesses go into marketing, right? Actually reach their customers. And so you have customer engagement, which is actually reaching out to customers, right, who have actually maybe transacted. They're doing payroll, invoicing, appointments. They have Square Capital, so if your business needs a loan, then Square can go ahead and extend the loan to you. They're doing e-commerce, Square Card, which is something that you can use. So go ahead, sign up for a Square Card, and you can go ahead and use your Square Card as a kind of a debit card. And then they have virtual terminal, developer platform, and Square for restaurants. So I like to look at this kind of as different categories. So you have like the retail transactional side of Square, right? So that's where they actually have the merchant, kind of the credit card transaction services. But then they also have the back end where Square is trying to help these businesses engage customers, right? Do payroll, invoicing. Then you have the capital side, and then you have more of a electronic kind of e-commerce internet side of the business, right? And this is what I think is gonna be one of the most important parts of the business going forward. All right, so here's Square says, our seller ecosystem, this is from Q4 earnings in February, continued to grow in the fourth quarter, with total net revenue and gross profit growing 26 to 27% year over year. So their seller ecosystem is still growing. This is one of their kind of main business focuses for the past, you know, since their inception. And if you look at Square's growth over time, and this is kind of their first, the blue section is their whole seller ecosystem services. And so if you notice, they started out at $345 million gross profit, and now they're boosted up to $1.4 million gross profit, the seller gross profit. And we'll talk about this green section, which is the Cash App. And that's actually the more exciting part of Square, I think. All right, so the seller ecosystem, they, according to Square, represents an $85 billion opportunity. You have transactional profits, which means basically mean every time you go somewhere, you have to swipe your credit card, right? And Square can get a percentage of that. I think there's like 2.6% or so, plus 10 cents or so. They have a software side, a Square Capital side, and financial services. Next. And this is kind of like what I think is perhaps maybe the transformational moment for Square. And this is basically the Cash App. And all right, actually, this is kind of fun. Actually, I get to talk with you guys. Here's Dankus Ranch says, Dave, I see this pandemic as the death of small business. Isn't this Square's bread and butter? Okay, so you have to divide up Square's business, right? You have the transactional side, the seller ecosystem side. So we go back to here, right? And I think if you don't really grasp Square, you look at it as, oh, it's just kind of retail, right? But Square is actually marketing too, right? They're helping these small businesses market, which is more important. They're doing payroll, of course. There's not many people doing payroll appointments, etc. Maybe lending capital, but they're probably not even doing that because they're doing like these small businesses are doing the payroll protection. So yeah, I mean, Square is going to get hit, right, in the short term on this side of the transactional volume. But Square also has e-commerce, right? And so e-commerce, in a lot of ways, still is, could be very robust, even in the pandemic situation. However, Square is not just seller ecosystem. It's not just credit card transactions. It's actually the Cash App, which is, this is the second part of Square. It's the newer part of Square, and it's actually often the misunderstood part of Square. And I'm going to kind of go into this more. All right, Islam Mohammed says, machine learning enabled microfinance with Square. Yeah, so this is one of the advantages that Square does have. They are adept with using machine learning to try to get like loans out to people, to try to like approve people quickly for transactions. Yeah, so it's actually definitely one of the things. Mahogany Wilson says, definitely have been having my eye on Square. All right, Dinum says, everything okay, but is there any long-term vision there? Right. All right. So yeah, this is going to be interesting for you guys. So the Cash App is on the iOS App Store and the Google Play Store. And in the Cash App, you can get a cash card, which is like a physical card that you can go and use it as a debit card. And you can also use the Cash App to send money to friends and family or just to different people. It's kind of like a PayPal, right, in a sense. And then within the Cash App, you have these things called Boosts. And Boosts are things that you get discounts for various things. For example, if you order food at DoorDash, you get a 10% off of your order. And there's a bunch of different boosts, right? Probably dozens. And every time, right, a person uses a boost, Square probably gets a big cut, right, of that as well. And then last quarter in Q4, Square announced stocks, right? So you can buy fractional shares in stocks. And I'm just starting to, you know, try this out. It's going to be interesting. I kind of prefer actually if they would actually allow people just to take, you know, ownership of full shares. I think fractional shares is kind of like a headache in my opinion. I wish they would just do more of a traditional, you know, regular one share, 10 share, but and allow fractional shares if, you know, people want to. You can do direct deposit in Square, which basically means it kind of can replace your bank account because instead of getting your direct deposit sent to your bank account, you get your direct deposit sent to your Cash App. And then from your Cash App, you can go ahead, invest in stocks, you could spend it, right, on services, you could give it to, you know, send it to people. And then you can also buy Bitcoin, right? And yeah, someone asked about if I've invested in Bitcoin. I'll answer that question probably maybe toward the end of the talk. And then, of course, in the middle and the center is P2P. All right. So here's Doug Spath Cook says, how does Cash App make any money given they provide such awesome boost discounts? Yeah, I mean, you've got to understand, like, there's a lot of margin in a lot of these businesses, especially for initial customer acquisition. So, for example, you know, if it's your first time ordering, right, on some service, or even if you do like a Walmart service, right, and you think that, oh yeah, I'm getting like 5 or 10%, right, by using Square for the first time. But for Walmart, they're looking at it as a lifetime acquisition, right, the value of a customer over their lifetime. And they're thinking, yeah, if we get this customer to actually buy something from our store, that customer can give us, let's say, $300, $400, $500 or even $1,000 over their lifetime. So they're willing to pay, let's say, like $50 or $100 or $200 for that first initial customer. And that's where actually Square can make, I think, quite a bit of money. But also ongoing transactions too, right? Square, because they're saving kind of on the whole credit card transaction in within the Square app. So if you use the Square app to buy something, let's say DoorDash or something, you're saving on the credit card fees, right? That's almost like 2.6%, could even be more. And then DoorDash also gets kind of, you know, the ability to correspond and interact with these customers. So it's gonna add up to a decent amount. And sure, DoorDash discounts, right? But in a way they can, they eat into some of their margin for additional volume through Square customers. All right, someone was asking above here, what's the difference between PayPal So Alberto Nicodima says, how do you compare Square to PayPal? So Square, as you know, they have the Venmo app, which is, you know, very similar in some ways, where you can send money, you know, P2P, basically peer-to-peer. And they also have, you know, similar services, right? They do loans, like, you know, PayPal, they do, you know, payroll, they're getting to many, many services. So Square, PayPal is probably one of the most direct competitors. The other competitor to Square, I think, is Stripe. And Stripe is on more of the developer side. And we can talk about some of this stuff more going forward. If you want to ask questions, actually, during my talk and after my talk, go ahead and add the all caps, quote unquote, question and a colon mark and add your question. So that's going to be easier for me to read the comments and quickly get the essence of, you know, what people are asking for. This user says, what is Square's moat, right? And we're going to look into this, the moat of Square. And I think Square actually has an interesting moat. Here's basically the start of the moat, right? And it's basically users. Here's the Cash App monthly actives over time. In December of 2017, it was 7 million people monthly actives. Then in December of 2018, you have basically a 100% jump to 15 million users. And then in December of 2019, you have another jump to 24 million users. So the essence of this Cash App is its growing kind of user base, right? And what that means. So let's look into this a bit more. Here we have how Cash App, how Square is driving engagement. And if you look at this, let's scroll in a bit. So you have peer-to-peer, and that's the genesis, right? So that's the core of Cash App. And then they added Cash Card, where you can actually spend stuff, right? Get a card and it gets basically deducted from your Cash account. And this was, in a lot of ways, what Elon Musk was trying to build. Here's David Wildby says, is Square simply trying to build what Elon says PayPal should have become? If you do ABC, you suck up all the money style. Yeah, so Elon has notably said that in the past he wished and he hoped and he wanted PayPal to become kind of a replacement for bank, where all you need to do is, once you get money inside the PayPal system, you never have to leave the PayPal system, right? And therefore, it would render banks obsolete or pointless, right? Because you wouldn't need a bank. And so Elon's mindset was with PayPal back in the day, if he would have stayed as CEO, was, hey, just add on incrementally all the services that a bank would provide. Like, so get direct deposits, right, from your checking or from your company for your payroll, and then go ahead and get loans if you need that. Get the debit card because you'll need that debit card. Give them rewards, right? Cash rewards or different rewards, so they don't have to go and buy a credit card. And even give them investing, right? Stocks and stuff, and give them a way to send money to people, right? And all of these things that Elon had in mind, Square is implementing slowly but surely over time, right? So they did the Cash Card, where you can kind of replace your credit card. Then they have direct deposit. You can get directly, you know, deposited your payroll into Square. You have Bitcoin investing, And then you have boosts. Boosts are basically kind of Square's form of, you know, credit card rewards, where you get basically discounts or coupons, right, for transactions. And then just recently, and this is actually, a lot of you guys, you might not have noticed this, but Square actually added, right, stocks, right, investing, where you can do fractional shares and stuff just in Q4. And so, slowly but surely, Square is taking kind of Elon's advice. It's kind of interesting because Jack Dorsey kind of, you know, looks up to Elon and has had him on with a couple of Square's company talks. And even Jack Dorsey, he was saying he listens to Tesla's quarterly conference calls, right? This was in the Joe Rogan interview recently that I watched. And so you got to think like, hey, if Jack Dorsey admires, you know, Elon Musk, wouldn't Jack Dorsey kind of take the advice of Elon Musk when in regards to financial services? And I think actually that's what Jack Dorsey has done. It remains to be seen exactly how well Square is going to execute this going forward in the long term. But let's take a deeper look again. All right. Here's Jason Vespa. I wish Cash App was in Australia so I could try it out as part of research. Yeah, definitely. You want to try out this stuff, right? I would actually encourage people before, like, hey, you know, having this fear of missing out, this FOMO of buying Square, like, hey, take a break, you know, do some actual research, right? Ask people, like, hey, are you using Square app? Are you using, or Cash App? Are you using Venmo? What's the difference? Actually deposit some money in, you know, do a boost. Like, get involved with the actual product, right? And actually get involved with the ground research of how people are using, right, these products. And the two big ones, at least in the US, are Square's Cash App and PayPal's Venmo app, right? That has really taken off in terms of peer appear and other things. Jason, I think you noted an interesting thing also is that Square actually does have international growth aspirations. And so that's something that, yeah, you definitely want to look at too. All right. Here we have a revenue per customer. This is solely for the Cash App. And right now they have an annualized revenue of $30 per customer. And I think this is probably one of the most bullish kind of things that attract my attention for Cash App. And it's not $30 for the past 12 months, but it's probably the last like month of Q4. So let's say December, they were able to get like $2.50 per active user, right, for December. And that equals a $30 annual kind of run rate. And so if you look at this, this is kind of like their revenue per monthly transacting. And this is $10 and $20. And so over time, they're able to increase the monetization for their Cash App users. And I think as more people use the app, right, they're taking advantage of different boosts and different things like that, where they're able to monetize. All right, so first, Cash App starts out usually with peer-to-peer. So usually they end up downloading because they want to send some money to people, right? And then they get a Cash Card, right? And they start using it as a debit card, and they start taking advantage of boosts. And then they start doing direct deposits, right, their payroll into their Cash account. And then they go into stocks and they buy some Bitcoin as well. All right, so let's go ahead and look a little bit more in Cash App. So I'm going a bit deep into Cash App because I think this is one of the most kind of underlooked underestimated things. Here it says that, yeah, they're growing revenue 140%, 104%. They have 24 million monthly actives like we shared earlier. But here's kind of like some interesting things here. Actually, I want to move on to this here, is investing. So they have investing in the first 3 months, right? The customers are taking advantage. The average customer is buying around $20 worth of stock, right? And so this is kind of like something where the goal is you never have to take your money out of the Square ecosystem because now you could even invest, right, into stocks. So in the fourth quarter of 2019, Cash App revenue was $361, but if you exclude Bitcoin, the revenue was $183 million, right? and the gross profit was $144 million. And so you see, like, actually out of $183 million, they're making a gross profit of about $144 million. And I know this because with Bitcoin, the way Square works is Bitcoin is not making much money at all on Bitcoin. It's like basically an at-cost venture for Square. So whatever Bitcoin comes in with revenue, they're just sending it out with the cost of revenue. I think it's kind of weird to me, but it seems to me that Square is actually like taking in like orders and then buying Bitcoin. And so like the revenue that comes in is that actual purchase price of Bitcoin, and the cost of revenue is actually what it costs for them to get the Bitcoin. And so it's not really like a viable business model in my way. It's more like a service, right? That doesn't really make money for Square at all. And so, so out of the $183 million gross profit or revenue, here's the revenue, they have $140 million or so gross profit. And this is actually quite amazing, right? They have a huge margin on the Cash App right now. And this is actually very bullish going forward. Now, I went to sensortower.com. This is where you can look at app analytics, and you can go ahead and take a look at and to see what's going on here. And actually, this is actually a good question by Justin. Justin says, are small businesses adopting Square at a rate to justify the company's valuation? And I would say, yeah, that's not the exciting part of Square to me, actually. The whole small business, transactional side. I mean, they've got some interesting stuff with like letting, you know, businesses like remarket or market to customers and doing their payroll and invoicing and loans, etc. But yeah, I don't think that type of market or that side of the business necessarily is what's going to do a 10x, right? That stuff is, I think, growing not as fast as I think it needs to for a company to do some crazy outsized gains. So here we have, and that's why I'm looking into Cash App and see what is the potential behind this. So in March of 2020, here's March of 2020, you have 2 million downloads. This is on iOS, right, in the US, actually. This is actually quite amazing. 2 million downloads in the US on iOS alone is a lot. And if you look at here, here's the ranking. And this is across all categories. So this is like the top of the top. We're competing against Facebook and, you know, all of the top apps here. And here you have... This is rank 1 and rank 20. And so you have, you know, Square around number 10 or so. So this is actually quite amazing. Number 10 in the entire iOS app store, right, across all categories. And so here's Yankee says, what differs Square from its competition? Yeah, I think a couple things differs. First is this right here, right? Like Venmo actually, surprisingly, is actually also a top 20 finance app. So I wouldn't, you know, bet against PayPal by any means either. But you see, Square, Cash App, and Venmo are basically the two consumer finance apps that have, you know, boosted to the top of the app stores. And this is what is driving adoption. What's great about this is you don't have to pay as much because the rankings give you the adoption as well. The rankings are promoting themselves, right, at the highest of the app store. And so it's giving millions and millions of downloads for both Square, Cash App, and for Venmo. And the other thing about Square, which is just different, is I think Square has more of a complete or a bigger ecosystem. I think the first time I looked at Square a few months ago, I was kind of like, it's like I'm not seeing the big potential behind the whole seller ecosystem, right? I mean, I see it, but I think they're just moving so slow. And I felt like Stripe was a much better, faster executing company. However, when I took another deeper look and I started to do a deep dive on Jack Dorsey, and I basically listened to about 5 of his interviews at length. They're about 30, 40 minute, 50 minute interviews or so. And I started to get into his mind of like, what is Square? Like, what is he trying to do? And then it clicked. There was this one interview or a couple where he said, he's trying to democratize finance or banking. And he wants people, because when you start a business, etc., like you need to access like different things like payroll and banking and invoicing and all this stuff and merchant accounts. And it's difficult for the small fry to do that. But what Jack Dorsey has in mind is he wants to democratize right, business. He wants to allow people, even if they don't have the finances and they don't have all the expertise, to quickly get their businesses up and running. And on the flip side, for the individual, he wants to democratize banking. He wants people to have access to banking functions, which is, you know, A, they get interest, A, they get investing, A, they can send their money, they can store it in a safe place. He wants the basic banking functions for as many people as possible. It's a democratization of banking that Square is after. And I think of the different kind of companies out there, Square's vision and what they're trying to do actually is very, very close to, I think, what Elon's kind of initial vision of PayPal was, is to democratize, kind of render the banking industry obsolete. Stripe is another company which is like mega, mega, ultra fast executing company. And they're more focused on the developer side. And they have amazing tools for developers to quickly get up and running and take payments online. And I think that's one of the weak areas for Square. They really need to up their game with online API processing. I think they really need to take on Square, which they are, you know. All right, and here's Ming. It says, question, do you think Square is expanding new products at Tesla speed? Yeah, you know, that is interesting factor. I mean, I have a friend who used to work at Twitter, and he used to complain a lot at how Twitter was run. He just said it was just a mess, you know, operational mess. And I'm just not clear in terms of, you know, how good an executor, right, Jack Dorsey is. It seems like to this point, though, he's made what's most important happen, right? He's made not just the seller ecosystem for Square happen, but he's made this Cash App happen. And through experimentation, some of it just pure luck, right? He's hitting on some core features that are just, you know, growing. And he's able to monetize, right, these features. Like, think about it. Okay, you have a $30 per active user, right, annualized revenue rate. But if you look at this, you have 24 million, right, monthly active users, and at an annualized revenue rate of $30, right, that's what $720 million in revenue. And I mean, if we're looking at gross profit of maybe 60 or 70%, even off of just these numbers, maybe it's like $500 million gross profit or so. This is gross profit that they didn't have just a couple years ago, right? That they can use to cover their expenses, etc. Now, if you boost up this number, let's boost it up to 100 million, right? This goes up by 4. So now you have a $2 billion gross profit just by boosting up the number of monthly active users to 100 million. Of course, this is going to take a few years. You're not going to see 100 million users this year, obviously. But look at the download rate. Look at the charts. And you can see that, hey, in 2 or 3 years, I say 24, yeah, maybe in 3 years or so, you could see possibly Square App, and including international expansion, right? Possibly be 100 million people. And if they can then increase this average monthly, right, revenue to $50, or let's do $60 per user. And the whole thing about finance, this is the financial world, guys. I mean, think about it. The YouTube channels that are making the most with ad revenue are usually, I don't want to say the most, but probably the most, are these financial channels, right? And yeah, it's like, and that's why you get like everyone, you know, trying to make a financial channel. So guys, be careful with who you listen to here. But yeah, so let's say you do $60 per user per year. That basically makes it $4 billion in gross profit, right? And that's far more than, you know, all their operating expenses. And so, and then if you project this out to 10 years down the road, right, it can actually get a little bit more bullish. So yeah, this is an interesting thought exercise here. All right. Here's Stuart Abel. Regarding those without banking access, if Square monetizes the subscription to Cash App, do you think people will be resistant and bail to a free competitor? Yeah, actually, no. Square is not going to make the Cash App a paid type of walled garden, right? The Square App is, or the Cash App is going to be free, right? It's going to be free to bring in your money and to spend your money. The way they monetize it is through these extra services, right? They monetize it through, let's say, you know, these offers, these boosts, and different ways to spend money that they take a cut, right? It's kind of like affiliate cuts and commission cuts and stuff like that. And so they're going to monetize it not in the entrance, but through, right, how people naturally spend money. Like, think about it. Like, some of the biggest affiliate programs are these credit cards, right? If you go to a website and they get you to sign up for like an American Express credit card through their website, we're talking about, I think it's like $200-$300 they get just for, actually, don't quote me on this, but you can do your own research. But in just getting you, right, recommending you, referring you to sign up for a credit card, like, it's like in the hundreds of dollars, actually, that they get just for you signing up, right? So this is big, big monetization opportunities, right? Just to get, you know, signed up for services. And think about it. Could Square offer life insurance? Yeah, why not, right? It could Square offer like home insurance? Yeah, why not, right? There's different things that Square could get into, but they're definitely not going to monetize the entrance, right? It's going to be free for people going in. Yeah, Gene Jackson says, Jack Dorsey is a huge proponent of Bitcoin, and the crypto aspect is the most interesting part of Square. Yeah, like, yeah, I have my reservations with Bitcoin, you know, and yeah, I kind of go more in line with Elon's view of Bitcoin. I don't think it's going to be the default currency. I don't think it's going to take over fiat. And while I admire Jack Dorsey's, you know, attempts with Bitcoin, I think it shows flexibility. Yeah, I'm just have not caught on to the Bitcoin train. All right, Roman Ogorod says, what could be potential risk for Square in the near future? What could affect its revenue significantly? Yeah, so there's two things going on here. One is we have to see short term, right? Near term, as you say. And yeah, there's a lot of hit with the economy, right? This pandemic has just wiped out small businesses in a lot of ways, right? And so you're going to see probably on the seller ecosystem side of Square, like a lot of the transactional value transaction volume go down, and so you're going to see a hit to that. However, if you look at kind of these charts, right, this is actually from January to now, Square is like top averaging 20 in terms of ranking for the Cash App. This means that they're gaining, you know, and this is not the Google Play Store, this is just the iOS App Store. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're gaining like a good 1 to 2 million users per month, right? So yeah, when they announce earnings tomorrow, we're going to see how many Cash, right, app monthly active users they have. And it's possible they have over 30 million by now. And that's pretty much the biggest bullish sign for Square going forward, I think, is that part of the business is just growing so fast, right? It's like growing at 50 to 100% rate, right? The seller transactional side can't compete with that side. So yeah, the biggest kind of risk for Square is more of the seller side, but you know, that's growing slower anyways. And the biggest kind of upside is the consumer side, which is what we can see just by these iOS charts. It's growing pretty fast. All right, 50DMIA says, do you happen to have Elon's plan for PayPal? I'm curious to find out what his plan was. Yeah, this is just through actually his interviews. He's referred to this several times, and his whole thing has been saying like his plan for PayPal was to replace banks, and the way to do that was just systematically include every function that the bank provides and add that onto PayPal, so people never have a reason to withdraw their money from the ecosystem, right? And that's the essence of Elon's vision for PayPal, and this is what the potential for Square might be. All right, P.S. Thighs and Fries says, how is customer growth a moat? What creates a moat that other services like Ally Bank, PayPal, Venmo, or Zelle can't copy? It must be a proprietary service or patented physical product. Yeah, this is actually, in my opinion, a more of a network effects play. So with network effects, what that means is when you add an additional customer, that additional customer adds value to an entire network of people and therefore makes the entire network more valuable. So for example, let's say there was rather than 20 million, right, Square Cash App users, there's 40 million Cash App users. So is it more valuable, the network? And I would say, yeah, because first you can send money to more people, but then also with that many more people, now you have these retailers. And let's say Square Cash App, and I hope Square actually listens to this or actually already has this idea. I'm sure they do. But if Square can get into kind of like what PayPal is doing, where you can buy stuff, right, online using your Square account, And I guess they already have that in a sense through their whole, you know, Square debit card, right? But if they can actually make the transaction really quick as well, like checkout by Square, etc., what you have is you have more and more retailers just adopting, right, Square. And so you have kind of like the entire network of sellers, an entire network of consumers all put together. And all of this just adds value to the network. And so if you want to, like, you're going out to dinner and you just want to send some money to someone, you just pay with your Cash App. If everywhere is accepting Cash App, you just do that and you get like a bigger, maybe better reward, right, from the Square Cash App. And so this network effect is something that's going to be very hard to compete with. Venmo is that trying to do this as well. They're one of the biggest consumer apps as well. Rajikishore Balabrina says, could it be a platform for managing all personal finance? Yeah, I mean, if you're already going into taking loans and also, let's say, investing into stocks, and if you do like mutual funds, and if you do like, you know, savings for, let's say, you know, have different savings account in your Cash App for your kids' kids' college fund, etc. And if you can go ahead and give like life insurance, like I mentioned before, and different just financial services, get into mutual funds, etc. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, like personal finance, definitely can be disrupted. And what better way to disrupt the personal finance world than through the App Store? Right? Look at TikTok. You know, how did TikTok become TikTok? It became TikTok because of the App Stores, right? The rankings just completely reinforced, right, the downloads, where you just had, you know, tens of millions of people just download this app and continue to use it. It's the best and cheapest way, I think, to go viral if you're able to create an app like that. Astro Boom says, does Cash App have any technological advancement that others just can't copy? Is the technological advancement relevant in their game? Yeah, so a couple things. One is, from my understanding and what Jack Dorsey says, is they actually do use a lot of machine learning to vet, right, people. So, you know, if they find someone suspicious, they might slow down the ability for that person to pay. But otherwise, right, they're just better at vetting the people. And that's going to be one of the biggest advantages that Square has going forward. The other thing is, Cash App has, I think, a UI or UX advantage too. It's just easy to use. What I'm going to do is, at the end of this video, in the video description, I'm going to add my invite link for Cash App. And if you use the link, supposedly you get $5, I get $5, so we both benefit. I think if you just sign up, you don't get $5. So use my link, you know, and then try it out, and you'll see it's so easy actually to input to add money. You just add like your debit card number, and then it stores it, and then you go in, and in 3 seconds you can add like $20 to your Cash App from your bank account. It's actually quite amazing, some of the user interface that they've done. Go ahead and definitely go ahead and do that. Aiden Vogel says, what do you think Square's outlook for competing and investing platforms will be in the future? Do you think it will bring in extra capital? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's possible. It's just that they've got a lot to work on, you know? I mean, yeah, just doing fractional shares, I don't think it's going to cut it. To become a real investment platform, they really have to up their game. And that's their homework, right? They've got a lot of work cut out for them. And Islam Muhammad says, downloads not equal users. The key is to create engagement, maybe synergy with Twitter. Yeah, so that's why, like, for example, they're getting 2 million users for iOS. And let's say they get 2 million for Android. That's 4 million per month. Over 3 months, that's 12 million users. But I don't think they're going to actually increase their monthly actives by 12 million. Let's cut it in half, right? So 6 million or even 5 million or so. And so you might have, like, you know, definitely lower numbers for monthly active users. And that's what supposedly the number that Square reports is, the monthly active users. Yeah, Tomer says, so 2 to 3 billion in gross margins in 3 to 4 years, in a 20 to 30 multiple, that's only 60 billion market cap. So it's just a 2x company. Your thoughts? Yeah, you've got to go ahead and make your own valuation call. I'm not going to give financial advice or investment advice to people. I'm giving like thinking exercise, right? I'm trying to help people think clearly through some of this stuff. But in terms of gross margin, yeah, you've got to incorporate this into a bigger kind of, you know, napkin math, right? Watch some of my videos on napkin math. And you're not going to give a 20 or 30 time multiple, I think, yeah, to a company that's growing super fast. And plus, this is just their Cash App, right, section. There's also on the other section, the seller ecosystem section, right? And you've got to kind of look at, when does this cap out? When does the whole Cash App user growth cap out? And you've got to kind of factor into that. And also, you've got to also factor in the monetization, right, per user, that it could actually, I think, grow much higher than even $100 per user per year. Just look at the financial industry, and it's they're making actually quite a lot per user. All right, Joker says, question, will you buy Square? Yeah, so this is a personal question. I have purchased Square shares probably like a month ago, or more than a month ago, actually. Something around there, about a month ago. And yeah, I'm spending my time analyzing the company. I'm not desperate. We'll see, you know, what they report. And yeah, I'm not one to kind of like pitch people to buy everything I'm buying. I think you got to make your own decisions. And yeah, my kind of recommendation, though, is to go ahead and to put some time to, you know, watch Jack Dorsey's videos, to read the annual reports for Square. Go to Square's squareup.com, go into their investor relations section, and go ahead and read through their annual reports, their quarterly reports, get a better idea, right? Download the Cash App, spend some time researching before just, you know, trying to jump on something that maybe you might not understand. All right, so yeah, this is a good one. Dinam84, is Square able to conquer or compete with Visa or MasterCard? Yeah, like Visa and MasterCard, man, they're behemoths, man. They're just like huge, you know, financial institutions, global, you know, umpires. And I don't think Square is necessarily initially trying to compete with them head to head in any way right now. I think the long term, yeah, there is some way where if Square can just internalize all the banking functions and even more functions of what a credit card does, with like rewards and paying back and, you know, interest, all this stuff of loans, then yeah, Square does become a competitor long term. But I think Square, at least in their lingo and language right now, they're careful to not pitch themselves as a competitor to MasterCard and Visa. All right, let's look at some of their statements, financial statements, and we're going to look at a few things here. So here is the last 3 months of 2019, and here we have transaction-based revenues giving $830 million. In the entire year of 2019, it's basically $3 billion in transactional revenue. Now, the cost of this revenue, to transaction-based cost, is $2 billion, right? And so I take that as that's the cost that they're paying to, you know, probably the credit card companies and all the financial fees. And so they're making about $1 billion a year on transactional costs, usually, you know, probably mostly through their seller ecosystem. And then they're going ahead and they have a subscription and service-based revenue. And in the quarter, it's about $280 million. And then over the year, it's $1 billion, right? And a lot of this stuff is, for example, this service-based system. It's like, hey, they're marketing to their small businesses to reach out to their customers, right? They're doing different, you know, invoicing and payroll and all this stuff. And the subscription and service-based costs for the cost of revenue is $230 million. So they're actually making a good $800 million in their subscription and revenue. Next, you have hardware revenue, which is, you know, they're selling a point-of-sale systems and all that stuff. This is $22 million, $84 million over the year, and the cost of it is $136 million. So they're losing money. Yeah, they're losing a good $50 million on their hardware, and it's because they want to subsidize, right? They want to, we'll take this question out here. They want to subsidize, right, the adoption of their whole system. And last, you have Bitcoin revenue. It comes in at $516 million for the year, and their cost of revenue is $508 million. So they're making $8 million off of Bitcoin. It's basically nothing, right? I don't even know like why they include this, right? They should. Anyways, yeah, that's they're including it because, yeah, I guess somehow they're they're taking orders and they're buying Bitcoin, and you know, they're doing it, I think, more as a service. So their gross profit for the year is $1.9 billion. Now they have to use that money to cover their expenses, and their total expenses is $1.86 billion. So they're covering their expenses, right? Their expenses is broken up into product development, $670 million for the year, sales and marketing, $620 million, general administrative, $436 million, transaction and loan losses, $126 million. So that's the gist of it, right? So basically on a GAAP basis, Square is breaking even, right? Their gross profit of about $2 billion is covering their operating expenses of about $2 billion, right? And so I think if you take out Bitcoin, the $500 million or so, the quickest and easiest way to understand Square is you have $4 billion in revenue. You have $2 billion, these are super rough numbers, so this is napkin math here. $2 billion in gross profit, and you have $2 billion in expenses, right? And that leaves you with zero. But this is kind of deceiving because with GAAP profit, right, it actually includes stock-based compensation, which is like stock grants to people. So if you take that out, actually, Square actually does see positive cash flow. So every quarter, they are actually doing positive cash flow. So it's not just like breaking even, not making anything. All right, on the balance sheet side, this is how much money they've got in the bank. At the end of last year, they had about $1 billion in cash and about $500 million in short-term securities. And other assets. I think they were saying they have about $2 billion in their annual report, I think, at the end of the year. It's a decent position for a company like Square. All right, Square is announcing their quarterly report tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And you can go ahead and go to their website and see their report. And what I'm looking for is, first I'm going to look for the number of monthly Cash App users. I want to see it increase, right, probably from 24 million to, let's say, 30 million or so. And I want to see that number of the annual kind of revenue that they're getting for each, or run rate for each monthly active Square customer, to move up from $30 hopefully. And I'm okay with, on the Cash Apps, on the seller ecosystem, with some decreased activity and with some poor guidance, right? Because I think the Square play for the future is going to be on the Cash App side and integrating obviously the Cash App with the seller ecosystem, and also growing the internet, right, side as well. But there's a lot of legs to Square, and hopefully we'll get some more insight into Square. Today, Square was up $3 to $66, and their market cap is $30 billion. And they're over the year range, I don't have this chart, but at the bottom it was around in the 30s, right, when the bottom hit like over a month ago. Square has done well in the past month, almost doubling in the past month. All right, so in terms of do I suggest buying Square or not? And I kind of refrain from, you know, making your decisions. You need to make your own decisions with investing. And I can say for myself, I like to take my time. I like to research thoroughly. I like to read the annual reports, the quarterly reports, look into interviews, try out the product, like go into user feedback, and really have more of a long-term view. I think sometimes it's easy to be quickly, you know, I'm okay with myself jumping in with a small exploratory position to get motivated to try to research the app. But for larger positions, I'm really kind of one that tries to research greater. And there's always a lot of risk with stocks, right? You don't know how things are happening. This is a $30 billion company, right? And a lot of things can go wrong. And a lot of the value of the company is because of their future growth potential, right? And so if something goes wrong big time with the company, right, this investment can go down significantly. So I just want you guys to be aware of that. All right, so I want to go ahead and go ahead with the rest of the time. Yesterday, we had some great questions in the live show that I was not able to address. So I just want to quickly go through those because I know people took a lot of time to ask those questions. This is beforehand. I already went ahead and answered that. Steve Bin says, I believe China is a massive opportunity that people are underestimating. Your opinion on China market for Tesla in the next 4 years? Yeah, I think I completely agree. China is a huge market. Biggest auto market in the world. And I think Tesla is a great brand. And their pricing, right? I mean, after incentives, I think it's like 38,000 something for the Model 3 made in China. I think it's a great product. We're going to see some good things out of China. And that's, yeah, definitely, you know, I think the timing is right for China. Nathan says, question, are you invested in Bitcoin at all? If so, why or why not? The short reason is, short answer is no, I don't have Bitcoin. I was actually kind of, you know, I thought the risk reward was worth it when Bitcoin was like around 500, Ethereum was under 20. And I have this long story, it's an interesting story. I was like in this, I was really sick with this massive like kind of bronchitis, asthma thing that I was like for weeks, I was just like having a hard time breathing. And I was researching, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum. I wanted to get Ethereum. Ethereum was like 12, 13 bucks. And I wanted to get some Bitcoin. Right? Bitcoin is like, I think 400 or something. And I was like trying to get a decent amount actually. And I think that was my my pitfall where I was basically trying to get the Bitcoin in person, in hand. I didn't want to go through Coinbase or anything. I wanted to get it. And so I was like trying to meet up with people, meet up with the actual people with Bitcoin and actually get the transaction done. And that just took a long time. I contacted several people to execute like Ethereum and Bitcoin and ended up just being so sick. And then, you know, the price went up. I didn't feel like the risk reward was worth it after it kind of shot up. And I think over time, actually, I've become less bullish on Bitcoin. And large part of the reason is I don't think it's going to replace fiat currency in the bigger money system. I think it's more of a niche type of financial system. It's just too expensive, right? The computing power for transactions is too expensive for to justify all of transactions to be on that blockchain, right? I think there's going to be a better database, right? And yeah, I mean, personally, I'd rather invest in Square than Bitcoin, to tell you the truth. Yeah, so Oyin's question, Tesla and impact of different US election results. Yeah, so you have Biden against Trump. Things can change, though. Who knows, right? Lots of stuff can change. I think Tesla does well in either case, but you know, that's my opinion. I don't think there's hopefully not going to be a huge impact. That's my just opinion right now. Alex says, have you thought about buying cruise or airline stocks during this pandemic because it's so cheap? Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm like, I'll pick up some companies if I think they're quality companies, but airlines and cruise companies, man, I just don't see like the next few years doing them doing well, right, in terms of their business. Justin says, Tesla stock price is $760. Is this a sustainable price for a stock in the midst of a global pandemic? Yeah, this is the question of the day, right? Is these companies, like a lot of times they go high and you're like, what's going on? Like, you know, is it worth it at this price? And that's where it's like, I think I did this video, it's like how to value Tesla. And I kind of look forward 2 years out with about a two and a half years out with 1 million cars, and I worked backward and did the napkin math, and I felt like, yeah, I thought it was a decent price, right, 750 back before the pandemic. But now the pandemic is here, you know, we're still at 760 or so. I think it's optimistically priced, but who knows? I mean, maybe the recovery does well, you know, and faster, and maybe the quantitative easing program, you know, does do a number, you know, to the value of money, where the money value kind of lowers and you see some equity stocks like Tesla and other kind of good balance sheet growth stocks just actually take off to all-time highs because of just the limited quantity of those. So there's a lot of question marks with all of that. Matthew says, question, do you have any opinion on 30 million unemployed? Yeah, I think this unemployed number is insane. I think it's going to take a while, longer than people think, to work through this number. Yeah, I could see unemployment be pretty high for quite a while. And last question is market. My coworker that worked for Tesla early on always bashed Elon and claimed that he isn't the real founder and other comments along these lines. Do you know what they're talking about? Yeah, there's a lot of FUD from shorts. And yeah, they claim a lot of different things. But now Elon was a founder. You can look at, you know, And here's the thing, if you're going to put up the majority of cash, right, tens of millions of dollars, like into the company, like, yeah, you're a founder as much as anyone else. But anyways, yeah, and Elon did input a lot into the strategy into the beginning as well. All right. I'm kind of running a bit late, so this is another live show with Dave Lee on Investing. I hope you enjoyed it. Go ahead and hit the thumbs up button if you enjoyed this video. That will help, you know, get the word out. And go ahead, if you can, I think adding comments after the video ends actually helps the algorithm too. So if I'm going to end this video in about 10 seconds. If you can go ahead and add a comment and, you know, maybe put down like, you know, what type of stocks you're invested in, or, you know, when you think Tesla factory will open up. It doesn't really matter the comment, I think. Just put some comment, right? And that's going to help. And think about it. You've watched this video for like 50 minutes, right? So I think, it's the least you can do. Take 10 seconds and add a comment, put the like button. This will help this channel get the video out and make these videos, you know, easier to make in the future. All right, guys, good luck, and we'll see you guys in the next video. Thanks, bye.